Hello. In this audio snippet, we would like to talk about several recent stories and events, and then, if possible, continue talking about Ulysses Grant's presidency, and in particular, his attempt at annexing the Dominican Republic. Which is all in the context of Black America and the Reconstruction period, and some of the things we'll be saying at the beginning may sound like they're not related to Black America, but I hope that you will see somehow that how the connection is there. It's not that obvious or plain in sight, but there is a theme, and the theme applies to Black America. Let me start by saying some things that, as I said, may seem completely unrelated, or seem trivial or, irrelevant, but, you have to understand that in humanity, everything is interwoven. All the actions, of people are interrelated. Atmosphere where there's this river and there are currents and things flow, and things that seem seem disconnected are tied together because they're part of the same flow or the same trend, and so that the connection of events and humanity is much more complex and interrelated than people generally understand. So please, as you hear these things, hear them in the context of that reality. First of all, we'd like to talk about certain things that have to do with the World Cup that's being played in Qatar at the time of this recording. And as I said, this may sound like it's irrelevant, but it isn't. And so I hope that you can hear me out. And this is all related at the end to Black America. And I hope that you keep that in the background as you're hearing all of this. We mentioned in the previous audio snippet that England were going to play against the U.S. And we spoke about how they had not been doing too well in the group stage, and people began to cry out for a player called Phil Foden, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, to be put in the starting lineup to play with the team. He's a young kid, a very talented player, but he was being benched because he didn't fit into the coach's system. And we talked about how that's a symptomatic of people trying to fit the truth to their ideology instead of adjusting their, quote, ideology to the truth. And it turns out that on the third game, the last game of the group stage, the England coach finally decided to put in Phil Foden, and he put in a second player, another young player he had benched called Marcus Rashford, and the two of them proved to be just transformational for the team. They completely changed the team's dynamic, and they were able to win 3-0 against I forget whom. I think against Wales, and Wales was very shamefully eliminated, and You could have assumed that the coach would have learned and said, okay, I've learned my lesson. I now know that I have to adjust my thinking to the players I have, in the same way that people should adjust their philosophy, their ideology to the truth in front of them instead of shaping the truth based on their ideology or philosophy of thinking. So you would have thought that he would have learned his lesson, But interestingly, when they qualified for the knockout stage, the last 16, because after the group stage in the World Cup, the top two teams of each group qualify for what becomes a knockout tournament from then on. So it starts with the last the 16 who qualified from the group stage, in England were one of them, and they had to play against the US. And in that match, it was interesting because I didn't want any of the two teams to win. They would normally be the teams that I would support the most. Being American, I would support the US and my heart has always been with the England team. So I would support them normally, but because of the evil that they have been practicing, England are one of the seven teams that try to kind of that banded together to condemn FIFA for not allowing the one sodomy armbands that are banned because they don't want to offend the government of Qatar. And we spoke a little bit about that, and I've been hoping for all those seven teams to get eliminated, and some of those teams were very powerful teams that were expected to go very far in the tournament. They were all promptly eliminated, except, and now there are only two standing at the time of this recording. Actually, it's just one. One is standing, which happens to be England. But the thing is that England had to play against the US, and everybody thought that the US would play well. And well, the thing is that England, the England coach put in Phil Foden again, which would make you think that he learned his lesson. But he left out Marcus Rashford. And I found that very interesting. Because Marcus Rashford happens to be a devout Christian, and I it was as if he wanted to succeed, but not with someone who offended his thinking, because this coach seems to be the sort of person who doesn't not who's not friendly to Christianity, and things like that. He is a very a liberal. He has his own religion. His religion is liberalism, and liberalism is very antagonistic towards Christianity, whatever version of it people may practice. Christianity has its issues, but the way it's practiced by people, but they oppose it on principle just because it's a religion that opposes a lot of their thinking. So he benched Marcus Rashford, and the thing is that Marcus Rashford had been instrumental. He had scored two goals in the game against Wales, and he just decided to bench him. And the thing is, Marcus Rashford happens to be black, and this is related. We've spoken about how the calling of Black America has been lost. Black America will never fulfill what it was supposed to fulfill. And it's as if that calling has been transferred in some way to Black Britain, to the black people who are British. And Marcus Rashford, in a certain way, represents that. But this coach, in a sense, wanted to. I know he's not doing it because of that, but as I said, there are ties, there are currents in the actions of in human events, and without him understanding it, it's as if he was symbolically saying, "I don't want that calling of Black Britain to be manifested," especially because when that calling gets manifested, a lot of the things that are embedded in the liberal religion, in the religion of liberalism, will be attacked and overcome. It will destroy a lot of their talking points. So he decided to bench him. He said, "Okay, I'm going to win without him." And he so they beat the US. But the thing with the US, and this is going to the theme that we want to talk about in this audio snippet. The US team seemed strong, and I was wondering, will they really do anything? But I was upset with them because they had tried to change their logo to a logo that emphasized homosexual pride, homosexual arrogance, and for no reason at all. Why are all these things being introduced into sport? It's football or soccer, or whatever you call it, or baseball or basketball. But they keep trying to jam all these thoughts down people's throats as you're watching a film or watching a television show or watching a sport. It's this fascistic liberalism that is just trying constantly to impose its ideology on people, its religion on people. It's like we're living in a kind of theocracy, but a theocracy where the theos, the God, is liberalism, and it's a false God, false religion, and we constantly get attacked, and that's why one of the reasons why I didn't want the U.S. to win. But the thing is that I began to wonder, maybe they are waking up or something good is happening in them. But I found out after the game between England and the U.S., which England won, that the captain of the team, of the American team, who happens to be black, a 23-year-old named Tyler something, I forget his name. Turns out he had a video call with a senile bastard who shuffles his feet in the White House, and who stole the election, as we all who are paying attention know. And he had a video call with this senile bastard, and the senile bastard was I didn't watch the video. It's too disgusting to even watch it or anything. But apparently, in this video call, he was on the call with this Tyler or whatever fellow, the captain, the 23-year-old captain of the American team, the black player, and he was wishing the senile bastard was, quote, wishing him good luck, and the captain was so happy to be talking to the so-called president of the United States, and we say that in big quotes, and he sent him a pass. I forget how it was, but apparently a 7,000-mile pass. Like he pretended to pass the ball or kick the ball towards the bastard, and the bastard pretended to catch it. Or I don't know if it was the other way around, who passed the ball to whom, but they made a symbolic 7,000-mile connection. And he didn't realize the stupid idiot, the stupid black idiot, didn't understand that the moment he did that, he connected the fate of his team. He is the captain, supposedly. So he represents the team. He connected his team, the American team, to bite me, to bite me, and inability, his incapacity. The son of a bitch doesn't even. I mean, he couldn't run a 100-yard dash if his life depended on it, and this idiot black captain tied the fate of his team to a man who can't even run a 100-yard dash, and who is senile and corrupt. And the moment he did that, he established a connection, and he sealed the fate of the team. So, and then they lost, and it was a bitter loss, and people in America were very, very saddened here. I remember that Saturday morning, I could hear people on the streets, kind of like awaiting the moment, and awaiting the game, and then the disappointment was so steep that it seems like everybody lost interest in the World Cup. I mean, that's the sense I get here in the U.S. And It was devastating loss, and people wondered what happened to this team that seemed to be so promising. Why were they so bad in that game against England and weren't able to, I think they lost 2-0. I forget the score, but they lost, and it was not pretty. They lost to England. And the reason for them losing, even though England is also compromised, is that they did something that created a dynamic within the team that led them to losing. And that's part of the theme that we want to talk about in this audio snippet. When bad things happen and people wonder why did it happen, and they don't realize it's something that they would probably find to be an innocent thing, had a lot to do with them losing. It's like they introduced a problem. It's like they welcomed the enemy into their home and let the enemy wreak havoc, and then they wondered why their house is destroyed. And that's what happened to this guy. And the fact that it happened to this Black American is a figure of how also how Black America has allowed the Democrat Party to sneak into their lives and destroy whatever they do. Black America should be thriving now. Black America should be succeeding financially, socially, and in so many other aspects. But Black America remains bound by poverty, crime, and hopelessness, and all this sense of the world's against me, and discrimination, and all this stuff, and they're trapped in that state because they have welcomed the enemy into their home, and they have made an alliance and a connection with things that are destroying them from within. And so, and the thing is that England then went on to play against another team, I forget which one, and I was thinking they were going to lose, but they actually won. And the thing is that they are not going to go far because they have this coach has tried to do the half and half thing. He said, okay, I'm going to let Phil Foden play, but I'm not going to let the other Black kid who was kind of in a great dynamic with Phil Foden play. I'm not going to let him play because he does not fit my ideology. I don't want to win with him, and people think that I won because I let this Christian Black player play and succeed. I don't want that, and I want to also reinforce that my system works. Yes, I put Phil Foden in because everybody else was demanding to put him in, and that game has given him partial success, but it's not going to go far because he's already compromised from within. And that's eventually going to get back to him and bite him. Now, the second kind of scenario I wanted to talk about is there was a game, I think it was yesterday, or was it today? My goodness. I think it was yesterday, between Brazil and Croatia. And I really didn't know what to think of that. Brazil is in the middle of this uprising, as you may or may not know, with people demonstrating, protesting the stolen election in the millions. And they are really actively decrying what happened. And it's been said for several days already that the military will step in and force the thieves out of office and kind of end the coup. It looks, the media will report this as a coup by the right, but the coup has already happened. It was done by the left, and it needs to be undone. Will the military of Brazil finally pull the trigger and do it? I don't know. I've been waiting and waiting. I hope that Bolsonaro is not holding them back, trying to kind of take the high road and act like he is this person who wants to play by the rules and this and that. No, he can't do that, because if he, quote, plays, takes the high road, he's going to put the people of Brazil in peril, because this guy has already done some things that guarantee that he's going to go after his political enemies and anyone who disagrees with him. And he's going to use the power of the state to destroy his opposition. So the people of Brazil are on the verge of something very bad. He should say no. We should revert the evil instead of saying, no, I want to play nice and I want to do it by, you know, constitutional procedure and blah, blah, blah. If he does that, then Brazil is going to go down a very bad road. And I hope he's not doing that. I don't know if he's the one holding the military back from taking a more concrete action. Who knows? I really hope he is aware that he needs to act forcefully and let the military do what they want to do. They want to help him, and he should just let them do it, because this is not a coup. This is a rectifying of something very blatant, a very blatant stolen election. So I didn't know whether it was like whether Brazil was in a good state, but I heard the news. I knew that Brazil were going to rise when their player Neymar, their star player, had his ankle injury, and he was out of a few games, and they were saying he might be out of the entire World Cup. And I was saying, oh yes, great, because Neymar's he's an evil. There's so much evil in him. I have been kind of rooting against Brazil for years because of Neymar. I used to be a big Brazil fan, and I have decided, no, Brazil, as long as Neymar is there, Brazil is an evil team. Every time Neymar is there, the team is evil. There's something, there's like a demon inside that little bastard. And I said, okay, this is a good omen. Brazil are going to have this evil influence on the bench or out of the team altogether, and they might, you know, do something. And but then suddenly this guy healed unexpectedly, and then he came back to play, and they put him back. And I said, okay, that's a bad sign. That means there's something evil there. And again, it goes to this theme. People say, why did this happen? Why did we not succeed? And they don't realize they let in something and welcomed something that was evil. And so this Neymar came back, and Brazil played against Korea, I think, South Korea, and they beat them soundly by 4-1 or 4-2. It was a rout. And the Brazilian players were doing the samba and dancing, celebrating each goal, but it was in a very tasteless way. It was not, you know, like somebody just happy and celebrating. They were choreographing these dances, and you could see the evil, and Neymar was part of it, and you could see how the mocking spirit in them. It was disgusting, and even the coach got into it, doing this pigeon dance and with the players and all this, and they were criticized by a lot of people for being so disrespectful of the South Koreans. You know, just like mocking them in a sense by doing all these dances, and the Brazilian coach in a press conference said, "Oh, the people who do this are do not understand Brazilian culture, and they're ignorant about our culture and our traditions and our way of life and blah blah blah." And the moment he said that, I said, "Okay, yeah, the Neymar influence there." And it's them saying, we are allowed to do this because this is part of our culture. That's always been kind of the an exit or kind of like a get out of jail card that people use constantly to justify wrong behavior. Oh, it's part of our culture. And if you criticize us, you're criticizing our culture. And if you're criticizing our culture, you're criticizing our people. If you're criticizing our people, then you're a racist because you think that you're better than us. And it's a very, very sick mentality. And as we've said constantly in these audio snippets, some cultures are superior to others. Some cultures have problems and moral values that are corrupted are embraced within the culture, and that leads to failure. And then people wonder, why do our countries not progress? The Hispanics, you know, they have all these countries with so many resources, so much potential that was there, and they've always been third world, poor, corrupt countries. Why? Because the culture that they have embraced, that they have allowed into their home, into their hearts, has led to all this destruction. And even the people who are not that corrupt, they because they are familially connected to the other people around them, they have a sense of family connection. They justify or condone the behavior of their fellow Hispanics or fellow whatever culture it is, under the guise of, they are my people. So even they don't practice the same level of corruption by identifying with them and kind of taking pride in their ethnicity or their culture or whatever. They justify, put a bubble of protection around all this corruption. And in doing so, they become complicit with it. And it's as if they are guilty of the corruption, even if they don't practice it in their own lives, by condoning it in others just because they are members of their same family, their same race or ethnicity or culture. By doing that, they are co-conspirators, in a sense, and they suffer also the consequences. And then they wonder, why are we poor? Why are we corrupt? Why are we living in these conditions? And they never seem to understand. As we've said before, cultures are like families. There are some good families. There are some bad families. I mean, it's just a fact of life. No one would deny that. But when you change the word family to race or ethnicity, then suddenly it's as if it's no longer a family. It's like you're entering another zone. And then in that twilight zone, things that should be condemned become justified because they're part of the culture. So the moment that this coach in Brazil, the Brazilian coach, said that, I knew, okay, this team is doomed. So when they played against Croatia, I could sense it, that Croatia had what it takes to beat Brazil in terms of determination, because a lot of teams could defeat other teams, but they are intimidated somehow, or they lack the conviction or the confidence, the conqueror drive to succeed. And they get intimidated by the other team, and that's why they lose, even though they had everything. It's like everything was ready for them to just seize the day and win, regardless of what anybody else thought. But I saw that Croatia had that attitude, that they were not going to be intimidated by Brazil and its reputation, football reputation, and that they could win. And as I was following the game online, I'm not watching the games, as I've shared before. I have boycotted this World Cup. I boycotted the one in 2014 because it was in Russia. And I was against Putin when it wasn't popular to be against Putin. I've been against Putin since 2005. For almost 20 years, criticizing him for the same things that people now criticize him for, just because it's the cause du jour. But the thing is that I've not been watching the game, so I was following this game online, and I could sense that Croatia were going to win, and then they were able to tie end the game in a nil-nil tie at the end of regulation. And they went into extra time. When they went into extra time, I could sense that Croatia were going to score five goals. And it was like one, two, and I could see them in sequence for some reason. One, and then two, three, four, five. Croatia's going to score five goals. And I could sense the confidence. I wasn't watching the game. I was just following the score online. That's all I had. I didn't have video or anything to watch, but I could sense it. And then in overtime, in extra time, Brazil scored first. So they were up 1-0. I said, oh my goodness, is this for real? And I said, no, Croatia can win. Croatia can win. And Croatia, I forget when it was, if it was at the very end It felt like it was towards the end of extra time that miraculously they were able to tie Brazil 1-1. And I said, okay, here we go. And then they went to penalties. As you know, in the knockout stage in the World Cup, if you end the game in extra time in a tie, you have to go to the penalties because someone has to win the game. And that's when I knew, okay, now it makes sense. It's going to be, they scored the one goal, and then they're going to score four penalty shots in succession, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they're going to win. And that's exactly what happened. Croatia scored four penalties, and Brazil was unable to score twice. And I knew, for some reason, don't ask me why, I knew that Croatia were going to score five goals. That was going to be enough. In other words, they were not going to need that sixth penalty, that sixth goal. In other words, their fifth penalty shot, because you have to, each team gets five penalty shots in the penalty stage or part of the game at the end. And I knew they wouldn't need to try to score a fifth penalty goal, which would have been combined with their one goal in regular time before the penalties. It would have been their sixth goal. So I knew they wouldn't need to shoot their fifth penalty shot. They were going to win after the fourth one. And that's exactly what happened, because Brazil, I think, missed two penalties. And therefore, Croatia didn't need to score that fifth, or even attempt that final penalty shot. And Brazil lost. And everybody was in tears. Neymar's like a little boy. We've had this generation of these big athletes who act like little boys, immature little boys. We've had Cristiano Ronaldo from Portugal acting like that. And the fact that he's been benched by the Portuguese coach has been a blessing, because he was a curse on the Portugal team. And Portugal has never been able to do much during the Ronaldo era because of him, his presence. Even though he's a very good player, there's something very evil. They're very... Not evil, I don't know if the word's evil, but there's something very immature in him. He's a flopper, the type who just falls. He's like a little baby, like a rich kid who always has to have his way. And we've had this generation of players like that. Neymar is like that too. And he was crying so bitterly because, like a little boy who wanted to have his little trophy or World Cup trophy. The thing is that Brazil lost, and the coach who said the statement about the culture and all that had resigned the next day. I think he's no longer the coach. He recognized that he was not going to succeed, and he stepped down. So I give him credit for that. But the thing is that they are all wondering why this team that was so talented, so powerful, so invincible, suddenly lost, and lost like that. Well, there's your answer. They allowed Neymar in there, and then when they allowed all that dancing, and when the coach embraced it as part of their culture, instead of telling their players, "You be professional. You show respect to your opponent." I understand you being happy, but after you were pouring it on, you were scoring the fourth goal, and the other team was completely devastated. You should have shown some respect, because these are people with feelings. They're human beings that also feel the pain of the loss. And instead of teaching them that, the coach enabled them and even danced with them. And he wonders, why did we lose? Well, there you are. There's the reason. You brought in the enemy. You embraced the enemy. And once you let him into the house, then bad things started happening to you. And the other thing I wanted to mention is the other game that happened today or yesterday was Argentina versus Holland. Now, Holland, it's another scenario where I didn't want any of the two teams to win, because I want both eliminated. Argentina are a Hispanic team. They are South American. They speak Spanish. They used to be kind of South American who spoke Spanish. Now they're just Hispanic. They're just like all the other Hispanics. They're calling the country of Argentina lost their calling, I think, in 2014. And I think it went into a coma state in 2009, and it officially died around 2014. Argentina still had hope of being restored as a nation, and they died. And now they are just evil. It's like the Uruguayan team that I've also kind of hoped against every time they play in the World Cup, and they always lose, and they never know why, but because they embrace a lot of evil. There's a player called Luis Suarez. If you know about football, you know what I'm talking about. This guy is supposedly very talented. I'm not sure, but that's what they say. But he's very, very tricky, very malicious. He does a lot of dirty things on the field, illegal things. He's even bitten players, literally bitten defenders, and pretended like he didn't do it. He has If I went on and on, he's evil. And he infects the whole team, or maybe the whole team is already infected, who knows. But the team is infected with this evil. The Uruguayans are thugs. They are. So they got eliminated, thankfully. I forget by whom. I think it was, I forget, to be frank, I forget. I think it was Senegal or some team like that, some African team. They were not expected to lose, but I was hoping and hoping and hoping against them and fighting them all the way. And thankfully, they lost. And when they were eliminated, they started attacking the referee. The players started destroying things. And I'm amazed that the people of Qatar have not arrested any of these thugs. They were vicious, vicious, evil people, and cursing. And one of the Uruguayan players, even there was a video of him after the game. He went after one of the FIFA delegates or officials on the sidelines, and raised his elbow and went towards him from behind and hit him and pretended like he was just walking past him, and hit him in the head with the elbow. He had his elbow raised intentionally. You could see in the video how he was aiming for the guy's head with his elbow just to hit it, because he wanted to punish some FIFA official, because they thought that FIFA had stolen the game from them because they deserved to win, like little babies complaining. Evil. And Uruguay and Brazil are very similar culturally, and they also had a great potential. Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay were the only three countries in Latin America that didn't die in 2003. But Uruguay is dead. Argentina is dead. The only one who's kind of barely alive is Brazil. The thing is that evil. And then they wonder, why are we losing? And this Suarez fellow just crying like a little baby, and some people were mocking him on Twitter and other, social media, whatever, mocking him, for crying like a little boy. And he was complaining and bitter because he lost. All their shenanigans were for naught. All their trickery and maliciousness and all their violence and everything was for naught. And they don't understand. I'm sure to this day, Luis Suarez is going to die, burn in hell. And it's only until he start burning in hell, I think, that he will understand why he never won. His team never won anything major in the World Cup, never had any major success, because it was because of his evil and the evil that his team just embraced. And Argentina, the Argentinian team is like that, but a little more subtle. So when Argentina were playing Holland, I didn't want Argentina to win because of their evil. I didn't want Holland to win because they were one of the seven who were protesting against, who had decided to band together to protest against FIFA for the one sodomy armband that was being banned. And I've been hoping for all seven teams to be eliminated. All of them have been eliminated except for England. So Argentina were playing Holland. I wanted Holland to beat Argentina because it's like the lesser of two evils, and then Holland would then be eliminated in the next semifinals, which will be against the winner of this team of this match was going to play against Croatia. So I was hoping for Holland to win here and then lose in the next match, but at least eliminate Argentina. But I could feel there was something wrong with Holland, and I think it was, why was there something wrong with Holland? because they were still connected to the seven nation thing, protesting against the war on sodomy armband ban. So there was something in there that was not right. And there are two best players are black, Holland, the two best players are black. And something happened in this game, apparently, where they were kind of unable to really do much. And it goes to the same theme. You know, Black America has allowed this bad thing into their lives and embraced it and given it cultural validation. And then they complain about why the world is so terrible for them, why life is so terrible for them. And in the same way, these two black players apparently were kind of stymied or kind of disabled, and they were not doing as well as they had been doing in all the other matches. And I had to step away from the computer. And when I came back, and it was late in the game, and Argentina were up 2-0. But it kind of made sense because I felt that Holland had something wrong in them, something that Croatia didn't have. But I said, no, I am hoping for Holland to win, to come back. It's 2-0, but I know they can do it. I know they can do it. And I was hoping and hoping and hoping. And then suddenly, 1 minute or two after I had started following the game again, Holland scored. So it was 2-1, but it was only, you know, there were only like 5 or 10 minutes left. So they were still down 2-1. And I kept hoping and I kept saying, no, they can win it. They can win it. They can win it. And boom, 1 minute before the end of the extra of the time after the 90 minutes, because they always, you know, give what they some people call injury time or whatever. At the very end, I could see it in my head. I could see how the play would happen, and someone would make a quick shot, who would get into the box and make a quick shot and score and tie the game. And that's exactly what happened. And I know that because I was reading the blog following the game, and they scored at the very end, 2-2. And everybody was shocked because, you know, they had been able to do that. And the guy who was doing the blog that I was following said, at the start of the set, but I could feel there was something wrong. And then I could hear in my head, 3, 4, 5. And I could feel that Holland were going to be able to score 5 goals. But I didn't feel the same confidence as I had felt when I could hear that Croatia was going to score, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. There was something iffy about it. Like, yeah, they were just going to score 5 goals, but it might not be enough. So I was concerned something was wrong. And the blogger said at the start of this of the extra time, you know, when they tied 2-2 and they had to go to extra time, he said, something happened. I don't understand, because Argentina was not handling Holland's direct approach, and now they're back to passing the ball around. So in other words, what the blogger was saying was that Holland was apparently passing the ball around. When they got behind 2-0, they changed their strategy, went full throttle ahead, like a direct attack, you know, just go ahead. And that goes, there's just an explanation for that. When they went on that attack, Argentina just couldn't handle them. And that's why they lost the 2-0 lead and ended up with a 2-2 tie. But after being able to tie the match, the Holland coach went back to playing the pass the ball around thing. Like, okay, now that we're tied, we'll just play conservative again. And that goes to this theme of feminine versus masculine. So he went into feminine mode, passive mode, instead of continuing in the male or masculine mode that he had gone into of attacking, of being a conqueror. He was intimidated maybe by, you know, the name of Messi, this Argentinian little bastard boy, who, that's also like a curse on that team. just like Ronaldo has been for Portugal, Messi has been this curse for Argentina, and Suarez has been the big curse for Uruguay, and so forth. And Uruguay, well, they are all curses. All the players are curses in and of themselves. But the thing is that maybe they were awed by this Messi guy. I don't know. But so they started playing defensive again, like in a feminine way, instead of going masculine and attacking. And it is this thing, just like with the England coach, like where you do half of it, but you don't go the full length. And he should have just gone full length and realized, oh no, we have to just go and be an aggressive team and attack. But he only did it halfway, enough to tie, but not enough to win. And I kept thinking, no, they have to score an extra time, Holland, because if they don't, they're going to lose. Even though I could feel that they were going to score 5 goals. And lo and behold, the game ended in a 2-2 tie, and they went to the shootouts, and I just felt there's something wrong. But even so, I said, they're going to score 5 goals. And Holland missed their first shot, penalty shot. I said, oh no, this is bad. And then Argentina scored, and then Holland missed their second penalty shot. I said, oh my goodness, they only have 5 penalty shots. So they missed their first two. It's like almost a death sentence. And how are they going to score 5 goals now if they've already missed their first 2 penalty shots? But I said, no, it's going to happen. They're going to score 5 goals. So the thing went on. Argentina missed a shot. And then Holland made all its 3 remaining shots. So that means that they scored 2 goals in normal time plus extra time. And they scored 3 goals in the penalty. So they went 2 and then kind of a iffy 3-4-5. Exactly as it was perceived. And then so they were able to tie the score at 5-5. And all that was left was now Argentina had to, it was a make or break. They had to make their last shot. And they did. And Holland lost on their last shot 6-5. And the reason why I'm telling you all this is Holland had invited an enemy. They invited an enemy within them the moment they allied themselves with with these other 6 teams to protest against the one sodomy armband ban. And also they must have embraced unnecessary fear of Messi, who is a very defeatable player, worthless little bastard boy, who will burn in hell the day he dies. He's emblematic of all that's bad with Argentina and the Argentinian people now. The thing is that he invited that, and that crippled his team and prevented them winning. There was fear in them, and it was not enough to win. And the other thing that happened, I found out later on, is Argentina did a lot of terrible things. They started a brawl. One of the players threw the ball at the Dutch bench, and at one point there was one opportunity, and that might have been an extra time. I don't know when it happened. I saw the video of it, a quick video shot of it, where a Dutch player received the ball, and he tried to do this trick. It's one of those 2 black players that I was saying, if I'm not mistaken, a very talented player. The Dutch player received the ball, and he tried to kind of do this. He flicked it with his with his leg, like behind him. He kind of tapped it, and what he wanted to do is tap it against the Argentinian player, have the ball bounce off the Argentinian player, and then he could go and attack. And I could see that if he had been able to do that, he had the field wide open, and he would have scored. I know he would have scored. But what happened is when he did this tap with his heel from behind, you'd have to watch the play. I can't describe it. The thing is he tapped the ball, and it hit the Argentinian player in the face. And the Argentinian player, when he quickly, there's a demon inside of him, and you could see the evil. They're evil. when the ball hit him, it's like he knew that the ball was bouncing away from him and that the Dutch player would be able to take the ball and go towards the goal and score. And as he saw the ball bouncing away, it's like the demon inside of him said, "Hit it, hit it, hit it away from the field, out of the field." And with his hands, he deliberately punched the ball out of the field, and that stopped the play. And he should have been red carded for that. He should have been thrown out of the game immediately, but the referee didn't do anything, didn't do diddly squat. And that's the type of evil trickery that the Argentinians and Uruguayans, all these Hispanic teams, engage in, because they feel that they deserve to win, and if they don't win, it's an injustice, and they're gonna do whatever it takes to win, because that's the Hispanic demon inside of them, that they don't care, they have no scruples. If they can get away with something, they will do it, and I believe that. That was allowed because Holland has allowed other things that they shouldn't allow, endorsing sodomy and all these things. So it's as if they had not done that, the referee might have been able to react more correctly and red card the Argentinian, and then they would have had a one man advantage and would have won the game. But they didn't. And by the way, I saw later on that in this photo shot, after Argentina scored on that last penalty, were able to squeak out a victory. They barely squeaked out a victory. They lost a 2-0 lead. And then they were way ahead in the penalty shots, and then Holland was able to tie them. So they had to go to the very last shot to win. So they barely won, and after they won, they went by you can see in the photo the Argentinian players going by the Dutch players, who were on the ground defeated, sad after having lost such a dramatic game, and they're taunting them and mocking them and making these horrible demonic faces at them, as if to say, "Hey, we beat you, you sons of that evil, evil." So, but why did this evil team defeat Holland? Because they embraced someone and let them into their home. And the two black players, these two very, very powerful black players who played for Holland, were limited by that. And that's why I'm saying this is, even though it seems like we're talking about other things, we are in a certain way talking about Black America in all of this, and many other things. And the son of a bitch who did the punching of the ball that I tried to describe very ineptly, his name is Christian Romero. Christian, imagine that, Christian. He has a Christian name, and he's a demon. Now that we've mentioned that, all of these things that are sport related. Now let's so now the only two teams that should not be there who are left are England and Argentina. England will hopefully lose to France, and they have to lose to France, and they don't deserve to move forward. England must be eliminated, and France do not have something overtly within their home that they have enabled that will weaken them. Unlike all these other teams, unlike Holland and other teams, they don't have that. So France has the power to defeat them, and they will defeat them, and throw those bastards out of the World Cup. And then all seven who supported the one arm sodomy armband will have gone. And Argentina will lose to Croatia, because Croatia has an anointing on them that will defeat the evil. Because Croatia is not intimidated by Argentina or their shenanigans, and they will go and attack. They will defeat them. So, and then the last of the evil teams will have gone, and then I really don't care. I'm a little indifferent as to who wins after that. because I'm following this World Cup more to just to be sure that the right teams lose, shall we say, that the teams that need to lose lose. But now we wanted to talk about another story that's not sport related or World Cup related, and it's this news story that I saw about and it's it was interesting when I read it, because it made me it gave me mixed emotions about so many things. And it's this story about this 82-year-old woman in Alabama who apparently was put in jail, was arrested and put in handcuffs and everything because she had not paid for a $77.80 trash collection bill. And this became like a big story in a lot of websites because of the injustice. You know, she, an 82-year-old lady, and two, and she happened to be black. So this goes into the Black America theme again. And she was black, and I said, when I read the story, it's like, oh my goodness, the shock of it. Oh, just arresting a poor 82-year-old woman because she didn't pay $77 for her trash bill. But there was more to the story than that. And the weird thing is, as I was looking for information on that story, a lot of this websites had this spin of, you know, oh, the poor little old woman. And they were all just painting it as if she was this victim of these two evil cops and this evil police chief in the town. I forget the name of this little town in Alabama. Something Valley something, and I think it's Valley. And they were showing like the ironic thing at the entrance of the city. It says welcome to Valley, Alabama, where people share and care. And that's the town where this story happened. So there's a certain irony there. But the thing is that, as I was looking for information on this story to find out what happened and all that, I finally found on the Daily Mail, a British website. I usually find things that I don't find in American sites on British websites because they are a little less biased or less prone to filter information than the American sites. And turns out that let me just read part of the story. And the Daily Mail didn't emphasize that she was black. I found out from other places that she was black. Interesting, in this story, they did just mention this 82-year-old woman. It says that and in another website I found it said two police officers, one black and one white, came to arrest her. So, and I found it interesting why all this mention of race, but it's kind of useful information in a way, but not in the way that these websites were intending to use it. And the thing is that these two guys were very respectful, and they had a warrant for her arrest, and they had to follow through with the warrant. And that's why they came to her house and arrested her. She thought it was a joke, but the guys were very respectful and say, "I'm sorry, man, but you know, we have to arrest you because you have a warrant because you were supposed to appear in court and you didn't appear in court, and that's why we have to come and arrest you." And they put handcuffs on her, and she wanted to, you know, they said, "Oh, you can put your hands in front of you," because she was putting them behind her. So you don't need to put them behind you, just put them in front of you. So they put the cuffs on her. And then she said, "The cuffs, they were so heavy." You know, that's what she said, with tears in her eyes and all that. And one of the officers, she said that one of the officers had told her not to cry while they were doing the arrest. Like as if to say, "Hey, ma'am, don't cry," you know. And then she said, "How would you feel if they came to and arrested your grandmama?" She was put in this little cage for like half an hour, I think, and then eventually she was released on bond, or I forget more or less what it was. And her daughter came, her daughter lives in Georgia. I don't know if she showed up because of this incident or what happened, but I find that interesting that she's in Georgia. We've talked about the relevance of Georgia in the liberation of the end of slavery and all that. But the thing is that she said that she was outraged at what had happened to her mom, and that that some she was surprised that some people she said some people have tried to pay the bill, but they don't want to receive the money that as if to say, and I don't know what she meant by that, as if to say that the city is only willing to receive the payment directly from the lady. But so this story sounds like what a tragedy, you know, people being arrested over just not paying a $77 bill and all that. But if when you read the story, you know, and people complained about this online, like, oh, this is the most horrible thing. But let me, I'm scrolling down the story and reading something that's left out of most of the other websites I went to, or all of the other websites, at least, that I saw. So the thing is, she had not paid her trash bill for June, July, and August. So it accumulated to $77.80. And that number is very significant, but the explanation of that is way too long to include here. The thing is that she then was asked, and apparently she had been contacted by phone, or she had been called multiple times, and they had not been able to reach her, and they went to her house to tell her, you need to pay this bill, or you need to present yourself in court. But apparently they couldn't find her in her house, and they left this notice on her door, and she says that she didn't know. She said, I thought the bill was paid, and I didn't know I had this court summons that I was supposed to be in court on September 7th. So she didn't see the notice that was left on her door, and she didn't know about the phone call. She didn't know about the visit, the in-house visit. So I'm wondering, did they go to the wrong house? What happened? Did the wind blow the notice away somehow? Or what in the world happened? So I feel there's something not right there. And the daughter did say that she has memory issues, so maybe that's part of it. Who knows? And when she said, I thought the bill was paid, well, if they does she does that mean that she thought someone else had paid it for her? Because she didn't say, I thought I had paid the bill. She said, I thought the bill was paid. So what does that mean? So there's something very iffy going on. And the thing is that the story that is said here, the story adds here in the Daily Mail, according to the Environmental Services, Mrs. Menafield has had her trash services suspended three times in the past 2 years for non-payment, and records indicate that there have been over 22 incidents of suspensions and revocation of service since 2006. And so, in other words, this lady has had these issues for quite a while, since 2006. That's over, you know, almost 16 years. 22 incidents. So because she was complaining, why didn't they just suspend my service and take out the trash can instead of arresting me? That's so evil. And in all her complaining, there was never a word of apology. I'm sorry, or sadness. I'm very poor. I don't have enough to pay, and I got behind, and I really feel bad. No, it was all this sense of victimhood. How dare they do this to me? And why did they arrest me? What, you should be ashamed of yourselves, she shouted to the police officers, for doing this to me. And in other stories, the ones that were trying to portray her as this, you know, poor victim, they mentioned that apparently she said that she's been having this conflict. Like, I'm a little upset with God, she said. I'm trying to work this out with God because I don't understand why God allowed this to happen. Because she said, I go to church every Sunday, I pay my tithes, so I don't understand how this could have happened to me. And when I read that, I said, oh, very interesting. So I said, well, there are a lot of things there. First of all, she has enough to pay her tithes. So she never complains about being poor. So she apparently does have the money, or I don't know. But she doesn't seem to be caring enough to pay her trash bill, has had her services suspended or issues with her services 22 times for, due to non-payment and stuff. So, but she pays her tithes. So she pays the to the Christian matriarchal system, and if you've read the website where these recordings are posted, I think you'll know what I mean by that. And but the but they don't but she's not paying, paying to Caesar what is Caesar's, and paying for the services that she's being provided. And that tells me another thing too. If she has this poverty problem, and she's being so faithful in her church, wouldn't you think that her loving church, in Valley, Alabama, where people share and care, would be looking out for her, making sure that she's fine, that all her services are paid for, that she's, she's fine. But no, apparently not. And so she was asking, why is this happening to me? And we go to the same thing. She is living in a church system that is corrupt. The Christian church system in America and the world is corrupt. It is matriarchal. It is evil. And she's complaining to God and asking, why, God, have you allowed this horrible thing to happen to me when I have been right? Well, she's been trapped, or trapped herself in a matriarchal system, and funding a system that is corrupt and dead, a system that doesn't do anything for her. Kind of like the same thing that Black Americans do with the Democrat Party. They keep supporting the party and investing themselves in the party, voting for it constantly, but the Democrat Party doesn't do a thing for them, really, at the end of the day. They just reinforce the victimhood mentality. And I'm pretty sure that this lady in the church she goes to listen to sugary sermons that make her feel good and complain about the world and this and I'm pretty sure that I wouldn't be surprised if the pastor is very, I could be wrong with this, but the pastor is like very defensive of, because in a lot of Black churches they enforce this mentality of victimhood, of being paranoid, like we are in this situation because the white man treats us like this and all this social injustice nonsense. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's what she goes to listen to every day in church. And then she's surprised that she ended up in jail. And it goes to the same thing. You embrace certain things, you allow certain things to be there, you tolerate it, and you become complicit with it, and then you have to, and then you suffer consequences, and you don't understand why. And she's convinced that she's been wronged, and she never, starts to think, okay, maybe I'm having memory issues, maybe there, or if she just doesn't have the money, well, maybe my daughter could help me out, or maybe we could set up something so that I don't forget, or that someone helps me, or maybe pray for someone in her church to provide for her, or the church to help her out, or something, but no, she just thinks she does not deserve to be treated like that. And she said, "You shouldn't arrest me. If you wanted your money, you should have just canceled, suspended my service." And what she was saying is, hey, and that tells me she's been playing this game for 22 years. Like, when she doesn't want to pay the bill, she decides to, not pay the bill and get suspended. Then she must go through some rigmarole and then get the service reinstated, maybe after paying or whatever. But so she's been playing this game for 22 years, and she finally was surprised that it caught up to her, and she was finally arrested for it. And that goes to the same concept. And now that we've mentioned this, another story that I saw, not this week, but maybe a couple or 3 weeks ago, was this story on this conservative website. And it had to it, it talk The headline said something about the enemy within. And more or less the headline is something like Pastor Cary Gordon exposes the biggest enemy to the church and America. And when I kind of saw the headline, I said, okay, that sounds interesting. But when I saw the word pastor there, I said, oh, that's a bad sign, because that's part of the matriarchal system. The American church is run by pastors, and it should not be run by pastors. The pastoral ministry is a feminine ministry, a matriarchal ministry, and it's a ministry of death, of disablement, of sheep. That's why, you know, all these things have been happening, that, you know, the world has been turned into a whole bunch of sheep just following instructions from the CDC, from Tony Fauci, from all these priests that are out there, you know, the priests of the liberal religion telling them what to do, and they follow it, you know, sheepishly without questioning, without asking, and people wonder, why is this happening? Well, it's happening because the people who should be promoting truth and ethics and morality and right, but morality not at the level, not at the legalistic level. I'm talking about a different level of morality. That I'm not talking about. Please understand, when I say morality, I'm talking about something else than what most people understand. You know, doing what's right. That's the truth. You know, living by the truth. The people who should be promoting that are themselves promoting instead a sheepish paradigm, where they have these pastors who tell them what to do, what to think. They tell them how, you know, to understand the Bible, because the sheep are too stupid to understand it themselves, and people just go to church and just follow the rituals and join the this club in the church, or follow, do this activity, and they feel like they belong, and there's no search for the truth in them. They're just following like sheep. And then we're surprised that the world acts like a sheep, and that the Christians who are now persecuted and attacked are, you know, are powerless against all this evil, because, you know, obviously they have no power to destroy the evil outside, because they have allowed the evil within. So, and the pastors have a lot to do with this. So when I saw the word pastor in the headline, it was like an oxymoron, because the pastor was exposing the enemy within, but the enemy within is actually the pastors, the pastoral system. But he doesn't understand that. But I said, maybe he has something interesting to say. Maybe he's just called pastor because that's what people call them. And maybe he doesn't think of himself as a pastor. Maybe he's not a pastor. It's just a title, but he's really not like a pastor. So I clicked on the link and started reading. And lo and behold, he started talking about the enemy within. He started kind of talking about the things that we're talking about in this audio snippet, this thing about welcoming something, someone, inside and suffering consequences. And you wonder, why are we suffering the consequences? Is what you've allowed or embraced. But as he was talking, the enemy that he was exposed, so he was right on the money in the sense of he was saying some of the things were said in these audio snippets. The problem is not the liberals, it's the conservatives. The liberals will do their thing, they will do their evil, but they cannot be stopped because the conservatives don't get their act together, don't restructure their understanding of the truth. So he's right on that. But then he started saying the enemy within is all these churches that have kind of softened or loosened their doctrines, and now they allow homosexuality and they allow transgenderism and all this stuff, and he's right in that sense, you know, technically. And that's one thing I find so hypocritical, when a Christian church has a homosexual arrogance flag flying over it. And I go, my goodness, if you want to embrace that, then start your own religion, but don't use the name of Jesus Christ as a promotional tool to get people to your church and then preach them something else. Either you believe in what's in the Bible or you don't. If you disagree and think the Bible is a bunch of malarkey, then just go and start your own religion, and you know, call it whatever you want to call it, but don't use the name, but they're just use the brand. You know, it's like, if you don't agree with Islam, then don't take Islam and change it to whatever you want and then call it Islam. If you did that, in fact, and those who try to do that in the Islamic world get stoned to death and killed. That's why they don't do it. But the thing is that you don't take a religion and just fashion it to whatever you want and keep the name. I mean, if you believe the truth is a certain way, then, you know, or lay it down on a piece of paper and this is now my religion now. But don't use the brand name. So they use the brand name of Christianity, of Christ, Jesus Christ, because he's been successful for 2,000 years. The brand name has been successful, so they just use it. And then once people are inside, they get taught something that has nothing to do with the Jesus Christ of 2,000 years ago, or the apostles of 2,000 years ago, or Moses, or, you know, all the people in the Bible. It's just a completely different thing. It's just liberal ideology, the religion, just with a coding, external coding of Christian rituals. So the thing is that I agree with him on that, but I was saddened that he doesn't understand that that is in fact a consequence of something deeper inside. The Christian church cannot defeat all these transgender promoting and sodomy promoting people, because they have a matriarchal system deep within. Even the churches that are very traditional and that, you know, believe the Bible is the inerrant word of God and all these things, they are not in the truth. They are trapped in a falsehood, in a matriarchal system that cripples them from within. Because they have never bothered to question their understanding of things. They just keep thinking this is the way we've been doing it, and we'll just continue. That's the enemy within. And then, so it's ironic that this feels like an inception, like the inception film, like a problem within a problem within a problem. So this guy is recognizing a problem, but he doesn't realize that inner problem is the result of a deeper inner problem. And that's the one that the Christians, especially the diehard conservative Christians, are never willing to tackle. They think they have the right way, that their understanding of the Bible and everything is correct. And I can assure you, I could take most people, most conservative Christians, and talk to them, and I would expose their non-understanding of the Bible they carry to church every Sunday in 10-15 minutes. I mean, they claim to understand things, and they don't read their own Bible. They don't read it. Because everything is just indoctrination, and it's very comfortable. You just go to church, sit down, and have someone tell you what the truth is, instead of looking for the truth, having a search for the truth. And if they did that, they would say, "Oh, this whole thing is a waste of time. This is all nonsense and stupidity." And then they would search out for the truth, and then there would be an outbreak of truth on earth. But they're not willing to do that. So they complain, why are the liberals winning? Why is Joe Biden sitting in the White House? Why are all these things happening? And no one points within. And when the people who speak the truth say it to them, they just dismiss them and shove them aside, say, no, we don't want that. As we've said before, when they're offered a bridge to the truth, towards the truth, to get out of their falsehood, their trapped situation, they say, we are not interested in that bridge. But if someone offers them a bridge to nowhere, that's where they go. But the bridge to the truth that's being offered to them, divinely offered to them, they keep refusing it. They keep refusing the bridge to the truth. So you have the consequence of all the destruction. And as we've said, I believe we have less than 9 months left. And something has to happen in these 9 months, or this country's dead. And by dead, I don't mean that, you know, everybody's going to die in 9 months. I don't mean that, even though they're dying from the injection. But that's another story. But the thing is that, the country will continue apparently as normal, but something will be gone. And then we'll start a slow decline. It will start slowly. And I think if we die in 9 months, it will be a 30-year decline into nothingness. And then we will, America will have become a third world country, just like any other Hispanic country, just with a little bit more money, I guess. But it will be, you will know the country's gone. You know, just like when people knew the Roman Empire is gone, they will know America is gone. And it will be a very sad ending. We'll enter into a decline and then a collapse, an economic collapse. It will be unsustainable, what we have, and it will be over. And the dream, everything, the promises, all the great things that were promised for this country will be gone. The reason for why this country was born, that reason will be gone. The destiny that we were to fulfill will be gone, and it will be dead. And then maybe some other country will take what we left, what we threw away, and do what needs to be done. I don't know what country, but there must be a country out there. And it will be very sad. And I hope I don't get to see that. And I don't know what I'll do if this country is dead in 9 months. Because it shouldn't be like this. And it's sad. So much fighting has been done for this land. So much sacrifice and sorrow and payment has been made to keep this country's dream alive. And it just refuses to wake up. You know, it's like all these stories we've talked about of people who have this sudden defeat, sudden failure, and they don't understand why it happened. It's even like with the people who are dying of the injection, their family members are dying suddenly and unexpectedly, and they keep wondering, why did this happen to me? And they don't want to make the connection with the rape by injection, you know, the virus, supposed virus vaccine. They don't want to make the connection. They just keep wondering, why did this happen to our beloved family? And that's how America is on its way to dying. And as it's dying, people are going to wonder, what happened? Why did this happen to us? And it's because you embraced something. At the very core of it, it's because the conservatives in America embrace something and were willing to hold on to it for dear life and unwilling to break away from their ideology and seek the truth. And then it ripples out to the liberals doing the same thing, and then everybody. But I don't know if things will change. Hopefully they will. We'll see. Hopefully by the next audio snippet, we'll be talking about the World Cup having been cleaned of the last two bastard teams that are left. And maybe there's hope for, in the future. Now, when Argentina get defeated, they'll be the last team from the Americas left. All the teams will be European. And maybe, I don't know, maybe there's hope there. I don't know. We'll see what happens, and hopefully in the next audio snippet we will get to talk about the annexation of Santo Domingo and how that also, in a sense, plays into everything we just said in this audio snippet about embracing something that should not be embraced, because I'm beginning to believe that was the downfall of Ulysses S. Grant. When he began to obsess about annexing Santo Domingo, he embraced something, and then his presidency went downhill. After that, he started antagonizing Charles Sumner, and then things went downhill. He had scandals and everything, and then the horrible thing of 1874 happened, and we'll get to that. The thing when the beginning of the death of the country, you could say, happened in 1874, one of the most shameful years in American history. And I think it's all tied together. I know it looks like we're talking about so many different things, but it's there are very strong themes running throughout everything we're saying, and I hope you get a chance to see that in your heart and mind. Thank you very much for listening.